others, do you know what I mean? Joshua, Philippians. And verse 1 says, now these are the nations which the Lord left to prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan. Only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. Namely, 5 lords of the Philistines, and all the Canaanites, and the Sidonians, and the Hivites that dwell in the mount, Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon unto the entering in of Hamath. And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. You know, we're tested in the same way today. We're tested to see, are we going to hang on to the things we know, the things we were taught, the things we know work, or are we ready to, or are we willing to abandon them for, well, what sounds good, what looks good, what seems pleasurable? And that's something that's always on the table. Will I take the thing that I know is going to work, or will I take the fluff? And ultimately, this was the test time. If you think about this, you know, imagine we're trying to determine the maturity of an individual. So for breakfast, you make 2 different breakfasts. You don't know who they are or what they like, so you just kind of make a guess. One plate's eggs, one plate's Pop-Tarts. And you'll learn a lot about a person based on which one they're going to grab. Are you a Pop-Tart person or an egg person? And that's the test before them. Are you going to trust me, what you know is going to be good for you? Or are you going to chase something that you think is going to be better and in the long run is not going to satisfy you, is not going to make you feel good, right? I use that illustration of Pop-Tarts kind of sillily, but you think about that. How many do they suggest? What's the serving size for a Pop-Tart? 1. How many do they put in the sleeve? 2. Monsters. They're monsters, right? If I were to ask, how many here you'd open up the package, you just eat one? Not many of us would raise our hands and say, I just eat one. Many of you would say, well, brother, I'm a grown person. I'm not eating a Pop-Tart. Right? I'm going to have the eggs. Give me the eggs. I'll take some fruit. My doctor would have a fit if he knew I was eating candy bread for breakfast. I would get in trouble for that. On top of my refrigerator, I've got 2 different kinds of cereals. I don't eat cereal, but there's one that Danielle likes, and it's got oats and nuts and flakes and all natural ingredients, probably some tree bark in there just for flavor. And on the other side, we have what the kids eat, and it's the knockoff Captain Crunch. Why? Because I ate the knockoff Captain Crunch, they'll be just as happy with it too, right? The kind in the bag, the resealable bag, which anyway, so we got the 2 different kinds. What I'll tell you your maturity level. And ultimately, that's what this test is. Have you really learned your lesson? Are you going to continue to eat candy and hit a slump at 11 o'clock? Are you going to continue to chase after these fake gods? Or are you going to stay with the one that you know is going to satisfy you and be there for you when push comes to shove? Verse 5, however, gives us the answer to the test. It says, and the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, and Perizzites, and Hivites, and Jebusites. And they took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and served their gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and forgot the Lord their God, and served Balaam and the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, and the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim, I got off easy on the first time, 8 years. They messed up. And so often, that's our response too. And you think about the children of Israel, they only reacted in the way that you and I react all the time. Right? You've got the smart answer. You got the dumb answer. And what do we sometimes, what often do we do? The one we know we ought not do. And Paul illustrated that. He says, you know, so often the things that I would do, I don't. And the things that I know that I shouldn't do, those are the things I find myself into all the time. And he didn't say this, though, well, I just wake up and I'm doing the wrong thing, right? No, that's the nature of my heart. I want the wrong things, and I find myself doing the wrong things regardless. God told them to stay away from the people of the land, particularly their gods and their philosophies. He even commanded them to rid them of the land. When they got there, they saw that the people were attractive, their religious practice was tempting, and they were probably great cooks too. Leading to exactly what God did not want to have happen. They denied him, rejected him, then forgot him altogether. And that's what that passage of scripture said. They forgot him. They knew him at one time. And many of them, they weren't born yet when God did all the great things. But again, you hear stories, right? A lot of people look at me sometimes. I'll say something and they'll look at me and they'll look at my age and go, well, how do you know anything about that? Well, we've got the internet. We've got the ability to learn. And by the way, I've always been surrounded by old people. I know stuff, right? I might not have been there, but I'm around people who were and they got loud mouths. I pick stuff up. And that's what would have happened to them. We're not looking at a large generational gap here. We're looking relatively very short. Othniel, the judge that God would raise up, was the nephew of Caleb. So we're not talking tens of years. We're not talking tens of hundreds of years here. We're talking maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years. Who knows? But not long enough for them to have completely forgotten him the way that they did. Now, when we say forgot, there's two implications there. One, that they had no recognizable memory of God whatsoever. The other one would be that they left the practices of God, that they turned from God. Much in the same way that we would be brought back to certain things. Ah, I forgot about that. It never quite left the memory, but it wasn't at the top. And that's what I believe is their case here. That when brought back to the Lord, they said, yes, these were the practices that we had. Yes, this is what mom and dad would do before we would go to bed every night. Yes, this is what we would do when we'd wake up early on such and such a day. They would recognize those things once brought back to them, but their practices, their ideologies, their philosophies, everything was left aside for them to adopt this new thing. We talked about it last week, how we are very much among a philosophy and a group of people that do not gel well with Christian thinking. Right? And not just in how we form opinions or where those opinions come from, but the way that we adhere to certain things. 30 years ago, the things that preachers were irritated about were things that are more commonly accepted today. And now we're getting irritated at things we would have never thought of before. Why? Because the world, right? The philosophy, this humanistic philosophy of Earth, right? When we're talking about the population, the societal opinion, that sort of thing. We talk about them, their fads are ever changing. Many of you, you've lived long enough to see a certain way of wearing clothes go away, come back again. Go away and maybe come back again. Same thing with the way we wear our hair, the way we grow our beards, the different kind of jewelry or stuff that we put on. We see those things change. We don't hang on to things long as far as the flesh goes. Why? Because the flesh wants new. What else can I get into? And sometimes we'll look back with nostalgia and we'll want those things back over again. What we must understand is that we don't fit into that philosophy. We can't. In order for a child of God to know what they know and fit in with the Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, and the Perizzites of our day, in order for us to do that, we must embark on something called moral dishonesty. A sobering thought to me is that it did not take long for them to apostatize. We talked about Othniel, how he was raised up to be the judge, and it wasn't very long, just being the nephew of Caleb. And I thought about this too. It doesn't take long for us to forget God on a personal level, right? And that again, we talked about the progression of things. First, I forget it on the personal level. Then the churches let it go. Then the nation lets it go, so on and so forth, right? It starts right here in my heart. What I let go, what I don't teach them, it starts on a personal level. And it doesn't take long. I've seen a lot of people, they hit that teenage years, and as they get up to high school, there's a big temptation to fall back. As you jump into the workforce, for the first time, or into college for the first time, there's the temptation to pull back. When you are, probably about 5 to 10 years into the workforce, again, there's more of a temptation to fall back and stop going to church and stop reading your Bible. Why? Because you see yourself differently than you did when you were a kid, right? And I'm more around the people at my work or in my career, and I've got more people to affect me to come over to the Jebusite, Hittite, Canaanite, come serve Balaam, come serve money. That sort of mentality. And then I see it again when people hit right around 40, 45, right? That midlife crisis. For those of you out in the parking lot, I'm using air quotes because I don't really believe you hit a crisis. I think we hit a certain age and we wish we were young again and we realize that we're running out of time, so we pretend we're young, right? That person who gives up their 401k and their job of 15 years to fulfill that long dream of theirs to go off and own their own barbecue restaurant, and you know you couldn't trust them with the hot dogs at the last 4th of July get together, right? I'm just going to give it all up, and I can't go to church, and I don't want to get... That'll hit around then, too, where you try to change your identity, change who you think you are, right? And you don't always remember God in that. Another thing that I've often seen is when people go to retire. That is the second time where you see a lot of people dip out of church. Why? Because, well, now I need to get into this camper van and pretend I know how to drive that across country. And when I say pretend, I mean you've driven behind people pulling campers. Nobody knows how to drive a camper properly. It's just, you should have to pass a test before you can. But they'll retire, and I'm going to spend a lot of time outside of church, you know, hunting, fishing, camping, traveling the world, whatever their idea was. And you can do those things in moderation, but some folks, they just want to do it all the way. And you can't abandon the Lord at your old, in your old age. Where it all begins is just a little bit of sleepiness where you're sitting now. Now, Charles Spurgeon said, if you look into a congregation, you see a good number of people falling asleep, somebody ought to wake up the preacher. And I get that to some extent. It's my job to make sure you don't fall asleep. But it starts with not traditional sleepiness where you're nodding off like you didn't get any sleep last night. You're not paying attention. I've seen that in every age, in every generation that I've ever been surrounded by. They stop paying attention, right? And it could even be so much as having your kids in the pew with you. Now, you can't get rid of your kids in the pew. Sometimes some parents wish they could just go sit by somebody. Well, actually, we do that all the time. Go sit by somebody else. Right, and it's not even so much when I say children can become a distraction in the pew. I'm not talking about the hushing and the cooing and the bouncing them around that we do. I've sat in some conferences where I'll hear parents reading to their kids right there in the pew. Right? And I'm trying to toss my attention between, you know, the preacher's conclusion and finding out whether or not Little Bear finds his boots before school. And I've got to know. Why are they like that? What's going on there? Don't they know they ought to be paying attention? They do. But to them, the flesh feels better to be distracted because the flesh doesn't want the things of the Spirit, right? I'll see that with people. How do I do this? Maybe you don't know this, but this is my view of you. As a preacher, this is what I see. And when I see this, I know you're probably looking at your Bible. When I see one of these things done, like you're moving your hand around, at you playing Angry Birds or something on your phone. All right? I've seen a lot of people win a lot of points on their Bible app. I'm just saying. I've used, you know, an app on my phone. I've used my laptop or whatever in the pew. I've done that. But I've also seen people playing games. I've also seen people not paying attention. The devil doesn't want you to pay attention. Because if I don't pick up here, and I pick up later when I'm watching television or that movie series I'm into, if I can pick up the Canaanites and the Allite family information somewhere else, the devil wins. It starts off with a sleepiness in the pew. I'm no longer paying attention. Sleepiness to distraction. Distraction to attitude. Attitude to compromise. Compromise to absence, and absence to disappearance. It happens just like that every time. I've seen a lot of people go out the door for the last time at a church. I have. And it starts just like that. They're not paying attention. Then they're distracting themselves. Well, I'll bring a little bit of work from work. I'll do a little bit of there. I'll bring a little bit of work from school, whatever. I'll do that. And then they're distracted. I'll read to my kids. I'll be taking notes, making my grocery list, playing Angry, but whatever. Distraction. Then all of a sudden, the preacher will start to hit on something that they don't like. How dare you talk about lifestyles? How dare you talk about what I can or cannot be doing? And you know what? After a while, that irritation, that attitude, it doesn't just hide in there. Some of us were very expressive with our faces, right? In sales, they teach us body language. And some folks, they whisper their body language. All right. Oh, yeah, he's talking about that again. All right. And I guess some people, here goes again. Now, not in this church. I've never seen that. I don't know what I would do if y'all did. So don't test me because I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet. Don't put me on a spot or I'll put you on a spot. But I just, And it always come down to the same. You saying goodbye to the preacher. That was a great message. That person whizzes on by with a grumpy look on their face. The attitude grows. That attitude leads to absence. Well, I'm tired of going to church. I don't feel like going to church today. Instead of going to church, I'm going to go do X, Y, Z. I'm going to take the boat out. I'm going to go golfing. I'm going to go to the bookstore. I'm going to do whatever it is that brings me fulfillment and joy that I could be doing on a Saturday, but I'm going to do it on a Sunday because rebellion is fun. Yay. And then you go out, and all of a sudden, absence turns into disappearance. Whatever happened to so-and-so? Where'd they ever go? I've seen it all too many times. Why? Because we just want to try something different, don't we? A little bit of a moral vacation. And what the devil wants is he wants us to relax on the rules. Again, many times when people say they won't come to church when I invite them, that's why. Well, you Baptists, you have too many rules. The way you dress, the way you look, the way you can or cannot do certain things. And you know what? Very much the same. I'd rebel against being a child. There's too many rules with being a child. I don't like to have to look both ways before I cross the street. I don't like having a bedtime. I don't like this. So we can't just repel the rules and call that maturity. Call that having a choice. Actions have consequences. The rules show respect to that and give us an order and a function within the causality rule there, allowing us to not get hurt, allowing us to honor God, and not make him upset at the things we're doing. But what we have instead is a generation and generations that have looked over at the world saying, you know what, maybe I would like a cold beer at the end of the day. Maybe I would like a couple shots of this or that. Maybe I would like to watch that. Maybe I would like to just one time try this. And that's what, hey, come on. Come, why don't you, listen, I know you're an Israelite. Why don't you come on out to the groves? Now, for those of you that don't know how that goes, the way grove worship would happen is you would have, depending on where you are, there would be one or two posts to the gods that they would be worshiping there. And this kind of area had tons of them, right? Oftentimes we see the word Balaam. It could refer to any one of a number of different gods that were served around them. It was just how God named them. So they would have their gods, you know, in like totem pole type design there, and then you'd have trees going around. Again, depending on the time and the group of people you're with, you could go and lay your sacrifice. The sacrifice, most often we think that there would probably be mules because for whatever reason, we'd find a lot of mule bones piled up on top of each other next to these grove type areas. So a lot of it would be mules, but they also found child bones, goat bones, that sort of thing. So they would bring whatever they could sacrifice. And sometimes, again, depending on where you were, the trees would be named after certain relatives that died. All right, so for instance, I could go and there would be a rolling tree. And I would name that tree after the name of, you know, Grandpa so-and-so. And we would go and we would worship at this tree. And we would pray that that spirit of my departed grandpa wouldn't come back and get me in the middle of the night. So I'd sacrifice to the tree so that my grandpa wouldn't come back. So that this was the kind of mentality that they had that God said to turn away from. So imagine, I know you're an Israelite, but just come on over to the grove worship. Listen, we're going to have wine. We're going to have women. Come on over. We're going to have a good old time. And to the Israelites, this was tempting. We're not allowed to do these things. Like this wild and crazy stuff they're doing over in the woods, which happens still today, by the way. But this wild thing that they're still doing in the woods, I'd love to go see that. And then I'd love to go participate in that. And then, you know, what are we really doing with the Lord? He wants, you know, these sacrifices. He wants us to live to this code. But the wood gods, they don't pay attention. And that's our society today. The gods of today, they don't pay attention to the things we do. They don't care. The gods of money, they don't care whose job you had to, who's had to lose their job for you to get your position. They don't care who you had to cheat. They didn't care if you cheat on your spouse. They don't care about any of those things. The gods of today do not watch. And that's why it was tempting for the Israelites to go. That's why it's tempting for us. We think that we can do whatever we want and still find moral acceptance. It's not about moral acceptance. It's about whether or not I'm right with God. It's not a matter of whether or not society thinks I'm okay. Does God think I'm okay? So they'll try a little bit of this religion, try a little bit of this sin. And what relaxation on Bible doctrine leads to is experimentation and practice. So I'll try a little bit of, maybe I'll just go and watch. All right, now I'm not just going to watch, now I'm going to go participate. And now, since I can't serve two masters, I'm going to let one go. And if we look at today's day and age, between serving my flesh and serving God, which one do we often let go when we're trying to compete? It's almost always God. because God cares too much about what I'm doing. And what we'd never put together when we let go is that the reason why God cares about what we're doing is for the same reason why we care about what our children are doing. We want them safe. We want them secure. We don't want them going against us. And when we sin, we're going against God. And experimentation and practice has a way of changing your mind. As you become familiar with certain things, you lose your disdain for them. We talk about certain people that have certain testimonies. They were saved out of certain things. I could come across something that I saw at work, and I could tell a group of people, those who were raised in church, always around church, never around sinners, they would sit there with horror on their face. People who were saved out of that lifestyle would sit there and go, I've seen that. And you see the difference there. Their minds have been affected by that. Now, while they would never go back to that sin, they understand it. They see it for what it is. Now, I take anybody off the street and I say, hey, come listen, we've got this new kind of drug. We'd be able to find people in the area. They'd be like, yeah, I'll try it. Absolutely, I'll try it. Their minds have been warped. Why? Because I've tried everything else. I had a conversation with somebody one time. I said, well, listen, if I'm going to help you, I need to know how deep this went. I need to know how bad your addiction is. I'm asking the addiction questions. You know, what have you done? How much have you done? Are you on it now? When was the last time you did? All the questions that you normally ask. And we got all the way down to the list, and I'm like, whew. Like, so they can't keep up with you inventing new stuff, huh? And I just kind of laughed at that. Why? Because once you get used to certain things, it doesn't matter. You just keep going. Same thing with almost any kind of sin. You want to talk about perversion, sexuality, whatever. Some people, they'll just dive all the way down to the depths of things. All you need is a little bit of practice, and you become a really good swimmer. And that's what we do with sin. We'll be sitting there dressed all up for church on Sunday, and off doing horrendous things on Monday or Saturday night. And we cannot live that life where we try to kneel to Balaam, but at the same time serve God. Many a soul thinks that they can just find a pocket of people that believe as they do, that all of a sudden they become socially acceptable. They will seek out a liberal pocket in the church. Hey, listen, you really believe what the pastor said? No, I really don't believe what he said on that. Okay, well, let's talk about that. You know, let's talk to brother so-and-so. Hey, what do you think about this? Well, I don't really like that either. Well, do we have any scriptural foundation for it? Of course, they never ask that question. Because it's sin. You can't find scriptural justification for sin. I can't believe he got up there and preached on that. I can't believe he never read that passage of scripture before. Drives me kind of nuts. Well, the Bible doesn't say specifically that I can't go out there and, I don't know, pick a sin, any sin you like. Pick a sin, any sin. It doesn't say specifically I can't do that. Yeah, but in precept, we see this, 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 and this, and it's covered in that, so no. Well, I can't believe you'd say that. I can't believe you haven't read it. Come on, it's right there. Well, you know, I do this, and then you'll find another brother, oh, I do that, and stop it. I've seen that anywhere from churches that people start fights over the hedge coverings, over versions of the Bible. Well, I personally read the ESV. Well, brother so-and-so reads the ESV. Well, who cares who's reading it? God, that's not it. I can prove it's not it. Right? That's the main thing. What is it that's true? What is it that matters? Who we can use to for our justifications never matters. So in this idea of moral debauchery, next comes the rejection of truth. Because once you have a little bit of sin, you got that temptation to push away because you can't hang on to them both. Right? There's only so much hypocrisy the human body can put up with. Oh, I go to church. Oh, I love the Lord, but I'm doing this or that. You've got to be able to make a decision between one or the other. We'll see this too, where people will come to a certain, I don't want to use the word understanding, but they'll come to a certain thought. Well, you know what? That's what mom and dad believed. And just because that's what mom and dad believed doesn't mean that's what I have to believe. And we polarize the situation. It turns into what so-and-so believes. What does this church believe? What does that church believe? When the truth is right in front of us. What does the Bible have to say? Not what so-and-so says or what they believe. What does Scripture say? Again, how do we know that God exists? Well, we've got the Bible. Well, why are we going to sit there and use that to say that God exists, Jesus Christ exists, my salvation is valid, but we won't use it for the rest of the things? Just because, well, that's what so-and-so believed. That's not the point. You believe it. You grasp a hold of it. And after we get to that point where we start to question everything we've ever been told so we can go deeper into sin, we come to Thomas Aquinas said, that moral authority can exist outside of God. And then you get to what the Humanist Manifesto says, there is no moral authority. There is no absolutes. There are no absolutes. There is no this is right, this is wrong. The problem with that is that in doing whatever I want, I forget some pretty obvious things. What they forgot in this, because they didn't just go out to the Canaanite lands, they grew their own groves. They scratched out their own gods from the timbers. They took that philosophy and they brought it into Israel time and time again. What they forget is the obvious is that they grew the groves. They built the poles and the shrines in the center. They had to plant, they watered, they tended. When disease affected the trees, they had to treat and replant them. They had to cut and sculpt the poles used in this religion that served as representations of certain gods. They knew they were making it all up, but for the sake of a moral pass, they suspended reason. We do the same. Now, let's take it back to the realm of people with addictions. Almost everybody I've known that's ever struggled with addiction has had a friend that overdosed. And yet they can't break it. They've seen families ripped apart and shredded by promiscuity. And yet they do it. They deny the obvious. In 2004, a man by the name of Hwang Hoo Suk made headlines globally for his work in stem cell creation. So dial back to 2004 for those of us that were alive, right? 2004. That was the big boom where they started talking about stem cells, where we could take, and of course the research had been around for a while, but the idea from this man's report is that we could take stem cell from Xander and we could grow a third arm for him, right? So if anything ever happened to his arm, we'd grow him a new one. And it was off of this guy's research. And it made headlines. We talked about it. It was very controversial. Kicked off a huge moral and spiritual debate in America, right? Well, this charismatic, square-jawed scientist from Seoul National University became the pride of South Korea when he claimed he had created the first human embryonic stem cells by means of cloning. His smiling face was on the front of the front page of newspapers worldwide. The Korea Post issued a commemorative stamp in his honor. You ever have a stamp made off of you? I haven't. That'd be awesome. Since cloning is a form of cellular reprogramming, Huang's work generated the same kind of excitement as another person whose article I got this out of. But both promised the holy grail of regenerative medicine, patient-specific stem cells capable of repairing any damaged tissue or organ in the body. Doesn't that sound amazing? Right? Again, I lose a finger, I can regrow a finger. Right? If I need a new heart, I can regrow my own heart. Oh, it's wonderful. But an investigation by Huang's university proved his results were as bogus as could be. None of his 11 cloned stem cells even matched the supposed donors. He created these stem cells, put them out there, and if you're not familiar with the scientific process, if you come out and you make a claim and you write a paper supporting it and explaining it, in order to confirm this, you have to turn over your test subjects and your research. Well, the research had some problems with it, and then when they looked at the whatever it is he said he created, they didn't match the things that he said that he pulled them from. They weren't right. Which tells you this, that the numerous amount of reports and papers that he published them knowing he was lying. When we got all this money, when they said, hey, we want to use your face as a stamp, he said, yes, knowing he was lying. When he handed over the research, he knew that it was bogus. But he suspended reality for the sake of a dream. Now, I don't know what he was thinking. Could he have thought that this would have blown up in his face? In all actuality, the stem cell research has not done anywhere near what they said it's going to do. This whole idea of killing a child so we could regrow body parts, it's never been proven. It's just more cruelty in this world. But he lied so he could have the things. We see adults doing this every day in an every way feasible. I'm happy. You're not. It costs you $50 a day to be happy. You're not happy. Right? Why do you smoke? I like it. You don't like it. You wake up hacking up a lung every day. Right? Well, I like the idea that my wife and I have always been a little loose with our marriage rules. Yeah, and then you divorce 3 years later. You say that you're happy, but you're not. You're unhappy with half your stuff now. It's not right. And again, well, I'm happy. You have AIDS, you're not happy. I'm happy. You're miserable. You're taking antidepressants. You're taking anti-anxiety medication. You're taking all this stuff. You're drowning yourself in booze every day. I'm happy. How could you be happy? You've drugged and doped and medicated every cell in your body. How do you even feel anymore, let alone to be happy? We have to suspend certain beliefs. You're not happy. You're distracted. I spend so much of my time trying to convince people this. You're not happy with sin. You're distracted from problems for a momentary amount of time. What you're essentially doing is the physical version of taking the bill from the mail and hiding it in the bookshelf and never dealing with it. Well, I'm happy you're not opening those letters. Right, but the bill comes due. Well, nothing bad's happened yet. Well, when you have to settle your account, you will. When you stand before God, you'll have to answer for all the things you put off. What the Israelites ultimately chose is to forget the fact that they were deciding what was right for them. They were building the gods. When we live lives of sin, we do the same. We know what we're doing. We know the after effects. We know what's going to happen. And yet we pretend like there's never going to be any consequence. What's happened is we have taken away the moral attention, or the attention away from the people who've done the work, the research, the scriptural intelligence. We've stopped listening to the pastors, and we've started listening to these 20-somethings who make 30-second videos and letting them decide what's right or wrong for our society. Now I say 20-somethings, 30s, 40s, 50s, it doesn't matter. Yeah, well, because I have attention, that means I'm right, right? People wouldn't be listening to me if I wasn't right. We believe lies all the time. As a society, how many times has science come out and said, all right, this is bad for you, stay away from it. And then a few years later, science will come back, no, we're good, that's good for you. It's actually really, really good for you. We're sorry, we messed up. And then they'll come back a little bit later, and they'll say, well, we said that it was good, and by good we mean it's really bad. Don't have that. Think eggs. How many times have eggs been good or bad in your lifetime? Don't eat eggs. Eat eggs. Just eat the whites. Don't just eat the whites. Eat the yolk. Don't eat the yolk or the whites. It'll all kill you. All right, cholesterol. Good cholesterol. Bad cholesterol. Good fats. Bad fats. Back and forth all over the world. We change our minds on things all the time. Think about it. If one person is fallible, how much more fallible is a group of us together? You ever want to prove that man in and of himself is a problem? Right? Well, you're it. Think of all the things you've done. Now let's do this. You really want to prove that man in a group can really mess some things up? You ever try one of those, you go into the place, you got to solve the puzzles to get out. Well, you're locked in the room, whatever it's called. You're trying to get out of it. Get a group of your good friends and family in there and see if you're still good friends and family when you come back out of it. You'll learn some things about people you try to get into that. I stopped doing those for work. They're like, hey, we could do one of those. I'm like, I can't even run this business with these people. I'm not doing that. We can't get through the workday. There's no way I'm getting out of that locked box without a felony. No, we're going to stay out. We're proof of it. We are fallible. You get us together, we're even more fallible. I'll believe dumb stuff just because 7 or 8 people believe that it'll possibly work. Next thing you know, you got me shoving a fork into a light socket because I think it'll pop a key out. It's just not going to happen. So we scroll through social media, we scroll through the television channels, we listen to the stuff we hear at work, and we take this gospel, even though we've got the gospel sitting right in our laps. We've always had the truth. Many of you sat through church all your lives. We need no other gospel. And the source that they're getting from is a tainted source. Proverbs 12, verse 15 says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. I heard somebody do this one time. It was in a video they were doing. They were like, hey, listen, I am not a nutritionist. I am not a medical professional. I have no medical training. I've got no nutritional training. But here's some advice. Listen, I want to build a bridge for you. Now, I've never built a bridge. I'm not an engineer, but I've crossed a few of them, and I did a really good job. That's what we're getting at. Listen, I've got no idea of life. I've never worked hard a day in my life. I don't know anything about nutrition. I don't know anything about being a farmer. I don't know anything about being a cook. But follow my blog, and I'll tell you everything you need to know about restaurants that are good in the area. And we're listening to that. People who've never worked a hard day in their lives telling you how you're supposed to have, telling you about actions and consequences, telling you about morality when they've done no study, no research, and they're barely old enough to be out of school, and they set the bar. Now, why do they set the bar? Because people who sell stuff realize that they buy the most stuff. So I advertise to them, and then when they say stuff, I change my logo to match what they're saying. All right, so today it's this. Tomorrow we'll have a brand new thing that we'll get behind. Today we're all kneeling for the Pledge of Allegiance. And then tomorrow we're changing our logos to the rainbow. And then tomorrow we'll do something completely different to show that we're just like the people we get the most money from. They don't hide that. Look at some of the stuff that the CEO, not the CEO, but the head manager of Gillette said back when they did the best a man could get, why they did that ad. He didn't do it because they were making a statement. They were doing it because they wanted to make money. It was a selling thing. They got together and said, what can we say? The premise of it wasn't, how can we best get men on board? It was, no, what cause can we speak to that'll get the most attention? That's their philosophy. It's money. And as much as I would love to say, well, let's chase money. Money is a passing fad. It is. You'll have it today. You won't have it tomorrow. You'll have a ton of it, and it'll all go away. You'll retire with $3 million. The market will turn on you, and now you're back at McDonald's. You know, would you like cheeseburger? You know, it flips on you. It's not a good God. Money is not a good God to serve. The one I have does just fine. What they needed was a reformation. Deuteronomy 6:15 says, for the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee and destroy thee from off the face of the earth. We don't want to mess with God. And that's what people forget. Well, is this right? Is that right? No. What does God say? Because ultimately, it's him that I'm going to stand in front of. I'm not going to stand in front of Dr. So-and-so. I'm not going to stand in front of the Coca-Cola company. I'm not going to stand against a tribe of Instagrammers. That's not going to be my judge. At the end, I stand before God. And he doesn't have an Instagram. He doesn't have a Facebook. I have those things. He doesn't. Right? I entertain myself with a television. Guess what? God doesn't have a favorite television channel. He's going to judge me based off of his book, what he gave me, what he deems right and wrong. So he had to make a correction here, just like we need correction on a regular basis. So what was his correction? He warned them. I'm going to put you into their hands. They did the thing. So what did he do? He punished them, put them into slavery. Raised up Othniel to act as a judge. Now, a judge had two different jobs, and we see it displayed out throughout the book of Judges. A lot of times it was to emancipate the Israelites from whatever sin or whatever captor they had. And then she was in charge of getting Israel back on track, many times cutting the groves and the fake gods out themselves. If we're going to get anything from this first judge, it is that in order for us to get back right, we must remove the false religion in our lives. That false religion of humanism, that false religion of self-service, we must remove it. Othniel had a job and he did it. And in many cases, you know, as a preacher, I get up here and I hit on sin. Sometimes I'm just talking about mine. Every now and then I'll get on one of yours. We'll be talking about sin here. What's the purpose of talking about that sin? To show that I am superior, to show that I am angry, to make you to feel bad. None of those things. The purpose why we preach on sin is that we would remove that sin. Right? If I'm sitting there, Xander, take out the trash, Xander, take out the trash, Xander, take out the trash. I'm not telling him to take out the trash because I want to see him do something, because I want to interrupt whatever it is he's doing. I ask him to do that because the trash runneth over and it stinketh. Get out, right? I want to change. And that's why preachers preach the way they do. That's why your parents preach the way they do. That's why your neighbors in your pews preach the way they do against sin, to get it to stop. In our restructuring of our lives, once sin has taken a grip on it, one of the most important things we need to do is rebuild that relationship with God. And that's what they had to do. Go with me to James chapter 2, verse 1. Go ahead and turn there. James 2, verse 1. It says, "My little children, these things write I unto you, that ye sin not. And if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. And he is the propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. And hereby we do know that we know him if we keep his commandments." Whew. That's a neat little disclaimer there, isn't it? I know that you know him if you keep his commandments. Because if I really know God for who he is, I know what will please him, I know what will displease him, but I also happen to know that he's right all the time. And I want to listen to him. I had a certain opinion last night. Everybody in the house was sick and I was feeling kind of run down and tired. So I'm like, uh-oh. Well, if they're sick and I'm starting to feel run down and tired, I better take my temperature. Well, my wife wasn't home. And you know what? There was a time in my life where I used to be able to do stuff. And I didn't need a babysitter. So when you need to take your temperature, what do? You get a thermometer, and just do this for me. Raise your hand if you put the thermometer in your armpit. Raise your hand if you take the thermometer and you put it in your mouth. See, I'm a mouth person. Some of you already know where we're going here. I take my temperature. I don't like what the answer says to me. Danielle comes home. She looks over at me, looks at the thermometer sitting in front of me. She goes, "You didn't put that in your mouth, did you?" I said, "No. I ain't smart, but I ain't dumb." "No." She goes, "All right, because that's a rectal thermometer." Okay. That's fine. That's brush my teeth till 11 o'clock. It's fine. She knows, don't she? Now, to me, no, that looks like a mouth thermometer. She goes, "Well, no, I can argue with her. That's a mouth thermometer. That, no, it's a rectal thermometer. You know how I can tell? Because she said it." Is she right because it's her? No, she's not right because she's her. She's right because she uses the thermometer that way. For the baby. Right? Many of us were arguing with God. "No, Lord, this is for me to have." And God says, "Don't have that way. That's not right." No, I think this is okay. To me and my experience, what everybody else is doing, right? Everybody in the church said that's a mouth thermometer. You put it in your mouth. Yeah, that's where thermometers go. And that's what I believe. Everybody in my church said it. If I go down to CVS, everybody's like, "Oh, hey, put thermometers in your mouth." Everybody's on board with this. And God sat there and goes, "Yeah, but that's not what I created that for. That's not how I made that." Right? Oh, it was an argument. We joke about this all the time. Well, marijuana is perfectly natural because God allows it to grow. He didn't tell you to smoke it. Got some pretty rocks out in my front yard. Didn't tell me to chew on them. Just think about that. That's not how I made it. As a matter of fact, don't do that. I said in my word that if you did that, this will happen and this will happen and this will happen. I didn't make your brain to have certain chemicals running around it, right? It'll do things to you, right? Those people who obliterate themselves and drink every night, you're not made to do that. Your body will reject that. Your liver will start to shut down. God will sit there and say, "I specifically made your body to do certain things and you're breaking it. Stop it. You're breaking it in your sin. You're breaking your testimony. You're breaking your livelihood. You're breaking your ability to think with this sin. Stop it." Children of Israel, time and time again, would look around and say, "Well, what does everybody else say?" And they would deny the Creator who made the thing. And in the end, all they get is embarrassed. All they get is embarrassed. And in the end, when they have to stand before the Lord And one, they realize that they've been wrong all their lives about his existence. Two, they realize that he really did care what they did. And three, they realize the punishment that comes. What about me? I'm not lost. I'm a child of God. Right, well, there will come a time where the Lord sits there and everything you've ever done for him gets laid out. The fire will come and sweep away all the garbage and all that's real is remaining. If you've got nothing sitting there, no, you may not be sent to hell off of that, but that's not how I want to look to the Lord, right? I don't want to sit there and say, Lord, I did nothing. But I watched every episode and every season of this show. And I got out there a lot. You know, I didn't go to church as often as I should, and I didn't serve the way my pastor asked me to. But you know what? I did have a lot of fun, brought a lot of people a lot of laughter. Nothing. And all you have to show to him to say thank you is, well, I did what I thought was right. Don't make that mistake. Do the right thing. Right? When you hear the bells and the whistles and the worshiping over in the groves, you keep yourself away from it. Keep yourself as separate as possible. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we're grateful for tonight. Lord, we're grateful again that you've